first ever missing link AMA. AUA.
Sorry, you guys, I'm so literal. I was like, I couldn't do AMA. I can't.
Oh, it's fantastic.
This is Rainmaker FM, the digital marketing podcast network. It's built on the Rainmaker platform, which empowers you to build your own digital marketing and sales platform. Start your free 14-day trial at rainmaker.fm/platform. That's rainmaker.fm/platform.
And now, enjoy The Missing Link with Jabez Labrette and Micah Gadia.
Sometimes you just have a question that's just burning a hole in your mind and you just desperately want somebody to give you the answer. We opened up ourselves to an Ask Us Anything, also known as an Ask Me Anything. Today's AMA coming to you in charge with the Missing Link crew. We're going to talk about your questions asked inside our group coming up next.
The Missing Link is brought to you by the Rainmaker platform, the complete website solution for content marketers and online entrepreneurs. Find out more and take a free 14-day test drive at rainmaker.fm/platform.
Welcome to The Missing Link. My name is Jabez Labrette, and as always, I am stoked to be able to announce Micah Gadia's presence on the show as well. Hey, Micah.
Hello, Jabez Labrette. How are you?
Doing well. Excited for today's show because this is a totally new format. We have never, in fact, I don't know that I've ever actually seen a podcast do an Ask Me Anything. Those are generally reserved for live online environments like Reddit. But we thought it'd be kind of a fun way to interact with our LinkedIn group because we don't always do things the way that everybody else does. Before we jump into that, because there's going to be some people on here who are like, I wanted to ask a question. How do I get into the LinkedIn group to ask questions?
Yep.
Give them real quick instructions on how to join the group. It's a very active group, really, really good community. And I want folks that are listening to be able to jump on board.
Totally. And you'll love to be in our group if you're ready to get started with LinkedIn or if you've been doing it for a while and you just want to brush up on some new techniques for your marketing plan. So if you're in the continental United States, you'll take out your mobile device and you'll text 41411. The keyword there is MyLink, MYLINK. And I always like to remind you to take out that space because it autocorrects. And if you're outside of the continental United States, you can email us at missinglink@rainmaker.fm. And you can also email us if you just want to email us. missinglink@rainmaker.fm. We'll say hi.
Fashion way. Old fashioned. Yeah. Just send us the email. I'll be sending a courier pigeon your way. It'll get there.
Smoke signals.
So today, what we did is we threw out this question not too long ago to the group and said, hey, you've been listening to the show for a while. Tell us, what are your burning questions that you need answered? And I have not reviewed these questions. So this is in true AMA format. I don't know what the questions are going to be. So let's jump right in and go for it.
You got it. And I'm going to name names because thank you guys for putting yourselves out there and giving us these great questions. The first one we're going to start with Mr. Derek Smith. Thank you for writing in. And he starts out saying he's going to play devil's advocate a bit, but I broke down his question and it looks like it's in the name of advertising. Where do we draw the line of tracking cookies and not letting people leave our webpage?
Cookies and not letting people leave our websites. You know, over the last several years, and I think that this question is partially driven from, if I had to guess, leaving LinkedIn through like a Pulse article or a link inside the status update. So when we talk about marketing for LinkedIn, there is a lot to be had within the LinkedIn network. And we've talked at length about different places in LinkedIn, but we've also talked about getting people out of LinkedIn and getting them onto your website and getting them to interact with you through your content in other places. And part of this question is saying, all right, so I click on a link and I go somewhere else. Then I try to leave that page. And we've all seen those where those pop-ups come up and are like, wait, you know, what are you doing? Like, don't leave, like get more of our information, like sign up here today. Oh, I hate those, but they work.
I'm breathing through this.
They're so annoying, but they work. Yeah. That's what pisses me off, is that they actually genuinely do work. Now, this really does have to be market by market, So my company works only in the legal profession. It is not as effective in the legal profession with lawyers as it might be in a straight up B2C marketplace where I'm just trying to capture a lot of email addresses. It just doesn't work in our market, so we don't do it. And you really do have to take those pop-ups, run some split tests. That's what I always recommend about that. The tracking pixel side of the fence can get a little bit creepy. You know, that's basically where what happens is you visit my website. So if you go to www.gngf.com, get noticed, get found, gngf.com, we will now stalk you around the internet for like weeks.
In lovingly, weeks. I'm sure.
Like our ads will start popping up. You'll be on CNN, you'll be on Fox, you'll be on ESPN, you'll be just surfing the web, you'll be on some blog somewhere, and there's GNGF, there's GNGF, there's GNGF. We're like all over. Again, the data shows that those work. Now, it's important to distinguish that I'm not actually able to track you necessarily in the sense that I'm able to see everything you're doing. I am able to know when you come back to me and what path you took to get there. That's pretty valuable information for a marketer. I don't see that going anywhere.
Absolutely.
It's good. And if you're not doing retargeting, I know Janet Driscoll and some other folks that have talked about LinkedIn advertising retargeting through
AJ Wilcox is a big one, and he's actually active in our group quite a bit.
And you know, advertising retargeting, which is what that is, so those tracking pixels and cookies, we're talking about retargeting and Google's ad display network, is a very important component of marketing through LinkedIn. So whether or not it's creepy or not, or Big Brother or whatever you want to view it, I would take advantage of it now. I don't think you're violating anybody's privacy settings. You can always turn it off on your browser if you don't want your cookies tracked. So that's a user choice. But I see it as a good opportunity for a marketer to refine your message and make sure you get into the right audience. Good question. Way to come out strong. Goodness.
I know. Dear,
is that what we're up for today? Could you give me a softball here?
Pretty much, actually. All these questions, I had to read through them and kind of pick out and pull what we're doing. So I think that segues nicely into Peg Corwin, and here's the essence of the next one. So it's about low budget promotions on LinkedIn. So LinkedIn clearly is not targeting very small business, because after their webinars, when she asks questions, no one from LinkedIn even seems to respond to her about these questions that she's asking. So up until this point, she's mainly been recommending premium account and targeted emails after liking a person's update. So that would be for someone who has maybe $100 per month budget to spend. Now, if they had $500, she's thinking of recommending that they sponsor several good organic posts in the news feeds of a very targeted 6,000 minimum audience. Now, her clients do not have consultants to find audiences or graphics, people to design anything customer like that, and they don't have budgets to test. And she's asking, is this going to be worthwhile? Do you know anyone who is using the strategy regularly, and is it driving leads? And how would you use, you know, how would we use $500 a month to promote our solo consulting firm or a legal recruiting business or e-learning software or something like that?
Yeah. So this is a common, I think, budgeting mistake from a marketer's perspective. As they say, I've got $500 for advertising. What can I get with it? Oh, by the way, allocated zero for graphics and zero for anything else.
Right.
So the reality is you need to take your monthly budget, and let's start with the 100 and work our way to the 500. So if you have a $100 per month advertising budget, LinkedIn, number one, is not the right place for you. It is not, as long as you still have a premium account. And if you're paying for that monthly, then that could eat up most of that budget. But the reason you need that premium account on LinkedIn is to be able to send direct messages. But those are going to have to be higher ticket sales items, right? So you have to be thinking about the economics of your advertising. If you are selling something that is only brings a net profit of $10 per unit, then in-mails are going to take you forever to get scalable. If you're selling something that's going to, you know, net you $40,000, then spending some time and hours into sending direct messages through LinkedIn is a good choice. So let's just assume that people are not spending selling $40,000 widgets. Most of us don't. So if you are having a situation where you have a $100 budget, I would allocate $25 towards graphics and $75 on a Facebook ad spend. You could do the targeting yourself on Facebook pretty easy. Going to the $500 route, I still don't think LinkedIn is actually the best place for you yet. You are correct. Mm-hmm. LinkedIn, to advertise on LinkedIn, you are looking at a couple of thousand $5 minimum per month, minimum to even begin wading into those waters, in my opinion. There are some people that have had some limited success with lesser expensive budgets, but those are people that are running their own campaigns, really know what they're doing, and are really, 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 really good at creating content and graphics themselves. So they're saving money in other places. Take your $500.
Right, like Canva, I know, is a great one. PicMonkey is a great one.
Yeah, PictoChart, if you want to create an infographic, is a really good place to create an infographic, and you don't need to be a graphic designer to do that. Take your content, turn it into an infographic, take your $500, allocate $350 to advertising on Facebook and $100 to retargeting through Google's display ads, and you're going to see a way better return, you know, and if need be, start allocating some of that money to develop more content if you need some help with writing. You know, maybe somebody to produce a little bit of content for you to get you started. But those would be where I'd be looking at spending that kind of budget dollars if that's where you're at.
And we have content certification program that we have here for content marketers, and people have to apply. They have to take the class and apply. And I'll drop that into the show notes, because those are great, great writers, and they know exactly what they're doing. And, you know, for many, many aspects of the content marketing plan. So I'll drop that in if you guys need.
You're not failing if you're having someone else produce the content first and then you go in and edit it. I mean, you know, like that's okay. So some people have a real hard time with a blank piece of paper, and I understand, I get it. So, you know, don't be afraid to spend a little bit of money, but that's where those resource dollars need to be allocated differently and not just all spent on the click. Because to be honest, your return from online advertising, regardless of how good you are, is still going to be in the single digits of percentages. And so a single digit return on an investment
needs to be.
Yeah, you got to be thinking about it in that sense. And so some people are like, well, if I spend $500 and I get 250 people to click, then, you know, gosh, 250 people read my stuff. I'm sure that several of them are going to become clients. Definitely not.
Right.
And so do a little research on your numbers. HubSpot has done a lot of data mining on that stuff, that they've got some really good resources there. Google has some good resources internally on ad spend and return that can really help you kind of know where to go with that question.
Very cool. And the last thing I want to mention is Sean Callahan was with us last week, the senior manager for content on LinkedIn, and gave two incredible writing prompts to make sure you're writing solid articles. So if you are afraid of that blank paper, he gave two really, really awesome ways to get started writing your next article.
I feel like his whole episode was good about just how to continue to tackle content.
Yeah. Yeah. And those are the two things that just jumped out at me, because, you know, I write content each week and, you know, it does. I mean, you get blank papered, I think. So
yeah, writer's block is a real thing.
Yeah. So the next one I'm going to go into, I'm just going to read Anne's out loud and then see if there's anything different you want to add, because I thought it was a little bit close to Peg's. It says, you know, LinkedIn can be quite expensive, and she's more inclined to promote mid of funnel content like ebooks, webinars, than top of funnel content. She's working in Belgium, and rather than a small market split in two regions, each with a different language, she's like, that makes it even smaller. Is this the way to go? And what experience do other group members have for using sponsored posts?
She is hitting on something I think that is really important with regards to when and how to promote. And she's absolutely right. Promoting your top of funnel content, which for those of you that are new to this, top of funnel content would be a blog post or a really light piece of content, something quick and easy, and maybe it's 500 words or 1500 words. Then you've got your more produced content as you head down the middle of the funnel. And that content might be a large, you know, long form 3000 word article with infographics and maybe a little video. It might be a small ebook. It might be a white paper, things that took more effort and time to produce. And then you go all the way to your like really, really heavy content books. You know, like my business partner and I have a 300-page book that you don't produce that in a week. And so it takes a long time. But as you move down the content funnel, the mid-level content, or to steal a phrase from SEO, I'd call it the squishy middle, that kind of in-between area, is really where you want to be promoting your content from. So you want to be selling your highest invested content. You want to be promoting for free your mid-level content, and you want to be giving the marketplace your top-level funnel content as like a regular top of mind, staying on top, staying sharp, and knowing what you're doing. So her problem with the two languages is basically unsurmountable. I mean, there's just that is just the market she's in. There is no way around that.
We're sorry, Anne.
Yeah, the only way around it, Anne, would be to set up Google Auto Translate on your website and publish the content. But I would have to recommend against that. I think that typically does not end up translating the content very well. And from an SEO side, you lose out on the ability to get that content canonicaled in the other language. So I would say, sadly, keep producing in both languages and just plan on this taking longer to get the results. You might try targeting people who have a larger audience. So instead of just going after people who are your target market, are there other people who talk about what you do but have a larger audience than you do? In the legal space, my business partner and I have done this a lot, where we've gone to people who already have really big audiences, and they might even be semi-competitors to us, and offered to give them content for free, which basically is us getting access to their audience.
Right.
And so that's another way to amplify those resources a little bit and to be able to get a little bit more out of it. And then I've promoted their posts. So then I've taken my ad spending dollars and promoted the other person's website, who is a semi-competitor, but it's my article and information about me and my company.
And how to get in touch with you, and you great CTAs are in there. And
yep. And so, you know, it's a long play, but I mean, that's the whole name of the game, right? I mean, if it was easy, like we say, everybody would be doing it.
Everybody would be doing it, exactly. All right, well, we're going to continue with Anne here. Next is, she's struggling with analytics. She finds LinkedIn has rather limited native analytics, and it's difficult to get an overview of the impact of their posts in terms of shares, likes, comments, etc. And she has not found any socio-demographic analysis of the audience like the one that Twitter offers, for example. So they can see the characteristics that engaging with their audience, et cetera. So does this exist? Is she missing something in LinkedIn analytics, or
no,
what do you want to share about that?
She's not missing anything. This is one of the areas where I see like the Microsoft acquisition helping. Mm-hmm. I think Microsoft is going to boost up the availability to analytics. I don't know what LinkedIn's been thinking as to why they're not offering. They've got the data. It's there. They're just not spending the money to engineer the system to be able to let us see it. And I think that's important to understand. It cost LinkedIn money for us to be able to get access to that sort of information. It's not just like, just because they have it, we can see it. They have to build the system so that we are able to see it, and so that it is funneling things in the right way and providing accurate information and all that jazz. And so, you know, they just haven't invested the resources to make that possible, mostly because Pulse is not a money driver for LinkedIn. It's not a money cost center for them. You don't have to pay to post. So, yeah, they're not really as inclined to provide. And since companies really aren't posting in Pulse yet, we just got to wait until it becomes an ad revenue source. Once they start slapping ads in the middle of your Pulse article is the moment they'll start opening up more analytics for you. So that's just going to be a matter of time. That's probably something we'll see Microsoft helping with, along with the small business question from earlier. Microsoft's acquisition of LinkedIn will help the small business person, because they'll probably want to open it up to a larger suite of their products, which would include giving better access for small businesses. You know, so without the analytics, the question becomes, what do you do?
Right.
You don't have the analytics. I think a more important question is, since I don't have access to the analytics, how do I use this? What information I do have? And is there any other way to get more information? One of the things that I like to do when working on a Pulse piece or a marketing campaign is somehow find a mechanism, a driver, a method for getting them to click outside of the network. A good example would be a partial infographic in the middle of a piece of content, where to view the infographic, they click on it, it opens up a new window with the infographic JPEG inside the window that's being hosted on your website. I drop a tracking cookie on you. I can now follow you everywhere you go. I can start to get a better idea of your demographics. I could start to run some deeper analytics on who you are as a person. Now, that's starting to get a little bit complicated. I think a question is, do you need to have the data? Like, is there a reason why all of that data that you're asking for that could be provided for you is important to what you're trying to do? And if you're saying, I don't know if my content's working, we'll put a call to action in there. And if you're not seeing click-throughs, and if those click-throughs aren't the right people, and when they get to your website, they're not taking action, then your content's not hitting the right audience. That's intuitive. You know, yeah, there could be other things broken along the process, like your website and other things, whatnot. But if you've got everything else buttoned up, then I would just start looking at the end results and kind of reverse engineering your analytics question.
Okay. That makes sense. Awesome. Thank you. Great answers. Helpful. So next we're going to move on to Mr. Joseph Webb. Hello, Joseph. So he's got a couple of questions. First, he's gotten concerned about affecting analytics. This is, I think it's a different thing we're going here, by posting similar things in different places. So we get this a lot, duplicate content. So he, if he writes a blog post for his website and he posts that same article on Pulse, what happens with the Google rankings? Is it negative, positive, or what? And then to follow up, he wants to know, is he better off posting in Pulse and then having a blog post that directs people to his Pulse post, or vice versa? So what came first, the chicken or the egg, the blog post or the Pulse post?
Yeah. So this is a question of traffic. So first let me answer the SEO question, then I'll answer for all of you listening to figure out how to approach this problem. Number one, okay, from an SEO perspective, typically what an SEO person would say, and this holds pretty true, is that Google just doesn't give credit for duplicate content that is within a published platform like LinkedIn to LinkedIn. So there's duplicate content comes in a lot of formats. You got to be really careful. We used to syndicate articles over 20, 30, 40 websites, the same piece of information. Google has come down with penalties that have said that's not allowed. So stop doing that. However, mm-hmm. Google does understand that sometimes an article gets shared or gets reposted from one place to the next. So they aren't really clear in the definition of when you've overstepped the line. I would say there's no reason to be publishing a piece in two places ever. If you have to, LinkedIn and your website would be the way to do it. The order has to be your website first, because you need to make sure that that page gets indexed. Until the page is indexed by Google, it's not necessarily, Google's not aware that when you published it. So if you published it last week, but Google only crawls your site once every other week, then if that page is not indexed, then you got a problem. This is where Google Plus comes into play. Plus wanting your post on your website does tend to get your page indexed a little bit quicker, you know, and that's been tested out through Stone Temple Consulting and stuff, has done some good tests on that one. So that just barely will help your page get indexed faster.
Say that again.
Plus wanting your post on your blog will get that page mm-hmm. indexed quicker in Google.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Slightly. Once it's been indexed, you can technically post it onto the Pulse network to get more eyeballs on it. I don't like that method at all. I have not seen it work well. I think that LinkedIn is actually not giving those pieces as much weight. I think LinkedIn is checking to see if they're duplicate content, and when they are, isn't giving that piece internally the same amount of weight that it's giving posts that are written just for LinkedIn. Now, I can't confirm that. LinkedIn has actually denied that, but everything I've seen and the experiments I've done and everybody I know that posts a lot of content, that tends to be true. So I don't think it's good practice. Now, the question is, what do you do and how do you know where to post? So if your traffic on your website is over, you know, 500 new visits a week, you know, if you're getting a couple thousand new visits a month and those people are interacting with your content, great. If you publish that same piece on Pulse and you get 200 people that see that piece total, then maybe your website's the better place to be publishing the content. If you're only getting 30 or 40 unique hits a week and you get 1,000 on LinkedIn, then you got to go the other way around. I take that content, put it on LinkedIn, and then make my call to action there. We always, always, always recommend that you try to get people to your website. You're in much more control of your website. Don't leave yourself up to the guise of, you know, the whims of the different social networks and the websites, hoping that they're going to help your business. They're not. They're in business for themselves.
Yeah, they're not in
Look
it for
Facebook's
you.
Look at Facebook's recent update, where they're cutting out the availability for a lot of news sources, and they're going more towards native content from user-generated content. Okay, great. Well, they do that one moment, they flip a switch, and then all of a sudden, there's all these other places that their content's not getting seen as much. That's huge. So don't rely on other networks. Try to force people to your website as much as you can.
But and that's always,
don't be afraid of the networks, but do try to push people to your own environment.
Right. Use them for the benefits and the qualities that they can give to you, but always back.
Yeah. So I always say unique content. So if you have a long piece on your blog, then write a summary, a unique summary piece for Pulse, maybe 400 words for Pulse, 1500 on your website. And then at the bottom of the article say, hey, if you want more information, if you found this interesting, I wrote a longer piece about it here.
Right. I like that. Yep. It looks like we're running out of time and we have a lot more questions. I'm sorry. So let me do one. Let's do one more question. We'll fit one in. And then can we continue next
week? Yes, absolutely. I think that this is important. It kind of hits some of those things that, man, you never know what information you're going to glean from somebody else's question.
Right. Okay. Well, I like this one. This is also from Mr. Webb. Thank you, Joseph, again. So he's having trouble getting his arms around the idea of having his LinkedIn experience seem more like a narrative, just like Jabez, like Jabezi, rather than the, you know, that typical CV start date, end date format. He doesn't feel like that is working for him. And he's involved in a few different initiatives. So he's wondering how to put that narrative into his profile and you know, his online LinkedIn presence, I think. Does that make sense?
It does. So there's two challenges here. Number one, you might have multiple things going on. So you may be a part of many things. Number two, how do I start to bake what I do into a narrative instead of just like a, you know, line by line chronological kind of drab format? So the first thing is, if you have multiple, so like I have multiple projects or things that I'm involved with, right? So I've been an advisor to Subway, the sandwich company. I've been on the, you know, Box.com's SMB board of directors. I've been on the board for the Entrepreneurs Network, and I have a company and I do speaking. So I've got all these. Oh, and I'm a journalist. So I've got all these.
That's a lot.
Well, right? They're actually kind of all connected. The reason I'm on the SMB board with Box is that my company is a heavy Box user, and so that's how I got into that. I'm in the Entrepreneurs Organization, so that's how I got on that board. Subway came to me through my speaking, and so they all kind of start to blend together. And most people find this to be true. Most of the projects that you do and the companies that you run and the things that you're involved with have some layover. What you do is you need to distill those different components into themes. What are the themes of what you do? And this starts with your headline. And so your headline on your LinkedIn profile should be more about kind of the way that you approach what you do and less just about your title, right? So it's okay to have your title in there, and many people do. But if all that you have in there is, you know, consulting in legal services or educating lawyers, then you're missing some opportunity here. And so for mine, in my headline, I have, you know, simplifying the complex. That's like a theme of mine. I pride myself on being able to take really complex things and simplify them so that people can understand how to go do them. And so that's what I put in there. I put, you know, that I'm a journalist. I put that I am involved in marketing. And so I kind of stay a little bit broad. And then as you get into my summary, I start narrowing things down into detail. But a lot of it is more thematic by nature, using the experience and details as the backbone for the theme. So I say, okay, here is the theme of what I do, and then here's why I'm good at that. Because look at this, look at this, look at this. Here's another type of thing that I do, and here's why I do this, because look at this, look at this, look at this. And that's how you start to build something to grab onto as a theme. And so then you can start talking more broadly about the general nature of what you do and with backfilling it with the details. And so it'd be like, you know, like it's weird if you walk up to somebody and they go on for 5 minutes about all of the little things that they do, right?
Right.
Like that's kind of odd. So you have to find ways to build these themes. And then those themes are what you use to start building narratives. And then you talk about it a lot, a lot, a lot. Like you talk about a lot. You go speak about it. You make videos about it. You write articles about it. You go to events and you talk about it. Like it just becomes, you go to conferences and you talk about it. And that just becomes, for years and years, everywhere I went, what do you do? Oh, we do marketing in the legal profession. Oh, you work with anybody else? No, we only work in the legal profession. My company does marketing for law firms. And so it was like this drum, right? And I was just beating the drum over and over for years. And then we'd go to conferences and go, oh, those are the legal guys. You know, we'd go to SMX or PubCon or Moz or, you know, Rainmaker or any of the awesome conferences out there. And they'd be, oh, the Mark and Jabez, the legal guys. Those are the legal guys. They do legal. And then once everybody grabbed onto that, we didn't have to say it anymore.
Right. There you go, Joseph. Boom. What's your theme?
What is your theme?
Yeah.
And it can change over time. You know, remember, these things aren't set in stone. So, you know, you can build and grow and adapt as your business and lifestyle change.
And that's your organic flow for your business and
so
for your
fun.
Life.
I love this. We definitely
we have a lot more
questions, and we do need to do right. one more of these, because this is a great learning opportunity for all of us, myself included.
Yes.
I'd love to hear the questions that people ask and what are they thinking. You know, and certainly, you know, join the group, you know, get in the group. And at the beginning, you know, beginning of every podcast, we talk about how to join the group. It is a good group. Not just saying that because I'm in it, but I really do love the people that participate. And I'm not the highest participant in the group. There are plenty of members that participate a ton, which is so awesome to see people learning from each other. Because that's really what it's all about.
Yeah. And it is. I mean, we are creating I would call it a gorgeous community in there that, you know, it's safe and people are willing to ask questions that, you know, might seem vulnerable, but you're safe in there.
It's a safe.
Definitely. Yeah.
Cool. All right. Well, then until next week, and we'll just pick this up right where we left off and jump right back into some questions. I want to thank you, Micah, for being such a cool host on this first ever Missing Link AMA. AUA.
Sorry, you guys. I'm so literal. I was like, I couldn't do AMA. I can't.
Oh, it's fantastic. We look forward to hearing, having you all back next week and hearing some more questions and jumping back into this format. So thank you guys very much. My name is Jabez LeBret, and we'll see you next week on The Missing Link.
Thank you for listening to The Missing Link. Tune in next week as we continue the discussion to improve your marketing on LinkedIn.